The United States is the second largest consumer of seafood, yet we import 85% of the seafood we consume. So what are the opportunities? What are the challenges? To help us answer those questions and more, we have the chairman of the Soy Aquaculture Alliance, Bill Bayless, a farmer from West Mansfield, Ohio, and interim executive director, Andy Tower. We are talking aquaculture this week on Town Hall, Ohio.
This is Town Hall, Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall, Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall, Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
Well, in for Joe this week, I'm Dave Russell. Well, we mentioned at the very beginning that the U.S. imports 85% of seafood we consume. Now, that translates into tremendous opportunities for U.S. farmers, especially soybean farmers. And the organization to help grow the industry as well as tackle those challenges is the Soy Aquaculture Alliance. We have with us today Bill Bayless, chairman of the Soy Aquaculture Alliance from West Mansfield, Ohio, and Andy Tower, interim executive director of the Soy Aquaculture Alliance. Andy made the trip over from Indiana. I take it, Andy, that the trip was smooth and no problems at the border?
Nope, made it across no problems.
Well, very good. Well, Soy Aquaculture Alliance, Andy, let me begin with you. What's the mission?
So the mission of the Soy Aquaculture Alliance is made up of the soy and aquaculture and seafood stakeholders to build partnerships that ultimately facilitate research that drives soy inclusion in U.S. aquaculture diets as well as global diets, and really trying to enhance consumers' opportunity to buy sustainable seafood.
So when or why was the organization started?
So the organization is relatively young still. We're about 5 years old. It was formed to really coordinate a lot of research that was being done by several of the different state soybean checkoffs around the country to bring it all together to make sure we're utilizing farmer resources and dollars most appropriately.
So that is where the soy part of the Aquaculture Alliance comes in.
That is correct.
Bill, take a moment. You serve as chairman of the Alliance. You're a farmer from Central Ohio. How did you get involved in aquaculture?
Well, I am on the local Ohio Soybean Council checkoff board. And when I first come on as the new member of the council, happened to be the same year that they were starting SAA, and asked if I would be the representative for Ohio to SAA, and I says, well, that's what I'm here for, is to serve, and it's been a great, interesting ride.
Educational?
Very educational. Things that I'd never thought about in aquaculture or fish, and the travel around across the United States as well as around the world has been very interesting.
So why are soybean farmers involved in this alliance?
Well, soy is one of the most sustainable food sources, protein sources, and aquaculture has relied on fish meal, which is topped out maybe at the best or being short supply, of course, quite a bit more expensive than soybean meal. So we see that as probably our biggest potential growth market around the world currently today for the soybean meal usage.
So, Andy, who does the Alliance represent overall?
So overall, we represent soybean farmers across the United States, as well as some of our key allied stakeholders in the aquaculture feed industry and also the seafood industry as a whole. But the ultimate goal for the Alliance is really to increase demand for soybean usage through fish.
So how is the Alliance doing that, Bill?
Well, primarily, I believe, research, for starters, but we're trying to collaborate with all of our other stakeholders and be the hub of the aquaculture world. So whether you're wanting to research, promote, increase just market shares, we're the hub of that.
So how does the Alliance determine how or what research projects you're going to be involved in?
Oh, very interesting. We have a unique system that we do that. We put out requests for proposals. Of course, we have our goals to start out with. We receive those requests. They are evaluated by some of the peers or the experts in the aquaculture world to begin with to say, yes, they do meet what our goals are asking for. And then there went through another level called STAP. What's STAP for, Andy?
It is the Scientific Technical Advisory Panel, there. Which is made up of industry experts from all over the world that review the research.
So are we talking of a significant investment?
Yes, a significant investment. Over the 5 years now, we're really into maybe not large enough as it could be, but we spend a lot of money on that, and we think we're gaining. However, it's a huge project to undertake.
So, Andy, when the Soy Aquaculture Alliance was started, was there long-term objectives established?
So yes, there were. At the inception of the Alliance, the board of directors went through a long-term strategic planning process and set out some long-term key objectives for the organization. And we're kind of to the end of that first strategic plan. And that's something that maybe the board will be looking at in the near future. Is it time to reevaluate, see how we've done against those benchmarks, and really then start charting the course forward?
So how unusual is it for farmers to start an alliance like this for aquaculture?
Well, first of all, fish are so much different than our traditional pork, chicken, and beef that we have worked with those animal types for years and have know what their nutrition needs are. But I believe there's like 123 different species of fish. Each one of those fish has got a different nutrition requirement. So there's why we're into research very heavily to figure out what those are. Gee, modern day DNA, things that we didn't dream about. It used to be a fish was a fish. Now we can turn a salmon frying loose. He goes out the ocean for 2 or 3 years, comes back. We can, according to his DNA, tell right where, what creek he come from up in Canada or Alaska or wherever. It's just amazing how we're into the genetics of fish. No longer is just a fish. It's a different species.
So who all benefits from the research that the Alliance is involved in?
So probably the most immediate beneficiary are aquaculture producers, both domestically and globally, because through some of the research that's been funded by the Aquaculture Alliance, we've been able to reduce feed conversion ratios in certain species of fish. We've been able to identify some genetic traits and markers that help enhance the growth. And so those are the most immediate beneficiaries. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's the soybean farmers, because as we continue to build stocks for around the globe and in the soybean arena, you know, this creates a new outlet. And you know, as you look at the growing global population, aquaculture seafood consumption is going to be one of the key things that we feel that can help get us to bridging that protein gap for this population. We think soybean farmers can really benefit long term from these investments.
Well, we're talking aquaculture with Andy Tower, Interim Executive Director of the Soy Aquaculture Alliance, and Bill Bayless, Chairman of the Alliance from West Mansfield, Ohio. I want to talk a little bit more about who benefits from the research. What about the consumer? Are they a beneficiary of the research?
Yes, absolutely, because by using soybean meal as part of the protein source for the diets versus fish meal, which comes from the ocean, and as we've heard for many years, a lot of our ocean stocks are being overfished. So by moving more to soybean meal, it becomes a much more sustainable food product. And as that becomes a larger conversation, both in the ag space and also around the dinner table, the consumers are also being able to benefit from the work that's being funded by the Soy Aquaculture Alliance.
So are farmers going it alone?
No. We are looking for strategic partners. We have several within the feed industry, as well as some within the specific aquaculture industry as well. So it's not all shouldered by the soybean farmers.
I had an opportunity a few years ago to travel with Becky Skillman, the Indiana Lieutenant Governor, to Thailand and Vietnam to see some of the work that was being done in those two areas of the world when it comes to aquaculture. Are you still involved in some of those activities around the world?
Oh, very much so. I just was in Vietnam, in Hanoi and Ho Chi Minh both about a month or so ago, and what they call raceway systems over there is a very popular up-and-coming thing where they were saying they can increase their production by 3 times in the same water space, because still it boils down to how much water per fish. And that's in the Asian culture in particular is so much more used to using fish as their meat protein versus, say, us here in the United States. It's more of a maybe a luxury to us, or different from our corn and beef and chickens, but not corn, but pork, beef, and chickens. But that's where we would like to see more expansion here in the United States, as the Asian world's population will maybe consume what we used to have. We wouldn't have access to so much.
The work that is being done in Asia and other parts of the world, would it be going on without the involvement of U.S. soybean farmers?
Well, I think ultimately it would, but the key for the involvement of the U.S. soybean farmers is being able to differentiate U.S. soy, because we have a much better amino acid profile than some of our competitors around the globe. And so by having folks and our partners, the U.S. Soy Export Council, a USEC that has technical offices in many of the Asian countries, they can then go out and work directly with those Asian aquaculture producers and show them the benefits of using U.S. soy maybe over some of our competitors from a nutritional perspective. As well as Bill mentioned, you know, the in-pond raceway system, that was work that was developed at the University of Auburn here in the United States, and then is really being quickly adopted in China and all over Southeast Asia. Because to Bill's point, you can increase the production by about threefold. And the key to that is you're not discharging the water. You're being able to keep and continually reuse that water. So as we think about back to that sustainability picture, by being able to do that and continue to reuse the water, it really benefits all of us.
Fascinating. Well, there are a lot of different areas that we can talk about when it comes to aquaculture, not only here in the U.S., but worldwide. And we are going to talk more about that. We're going to look at economics. We're going to talk environment and health benefits after this.
If I were a fish, I'd swim. I'd swim and swim all day. At night, I'd sleep at the bottom of the sea. And all day long, I'd play. If I were a fish, I'd swim.
Well, welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. We are talking aquaculture. In particular, we're talking about the Soy Aquaculture Alliance with Bill Bayless, the chairman of the Soy Aquaculture Alliance from West Mansfield, Ohio, and Andy Tower, interim executive director of the Soy Aquaculture Alliance. In for Joe, I'm Dave Russell, and it's a pleasure to be in the air chair here today talking with these two gentlemen about aquaculture. Well, at the end of this first segment, we said we were going to talk a little bit about some other areas, and one of the areas that we want to kind of focus on right now is the economics. How significant is aquaculture in Ohio? Bill?
Well, in Ohio, we've got a lot of startup, smaller companies growing. A lot of interest, I'd say, just we don't have the volume particularly where we would like to increase that. But still, you've got to start small. And if you'd read aquaculture news, you'll find out across, expand from Ohio across the United States, there's several upcoming new startup companies that's talking large commercial operations. It's really a huge potential.
So what can the Alliance do to help move that forward?
Well, I think one of the key aspects of the Alliance is, again, back to that research, because as Bill mentioned, there is a lot of interest in inland aquaculture. But as we know here in the upper Midwest and the eastern Corn Belt, I mean, our seasons vary pretty significantly. And so to be a long-term aquaculture system here, it mostly has to be done inside unless you happen to be sitting in a unique situation where you have free-flowing water from a nice spring or something like that. So one of the areas of research is in facilities and design. And so as we look at opportunities in what they call recirculating aquaculture systems, so it's housed 100% indoor, continual recirculation of the water, capture of the nutrients coming out of the fish. And so there's some great advancements being made there that as we continue to develop those, I think we'll see more adoption of that type of technology in, you know, the grain states, because again, it back much like why we see great development in terrestrial livestock is because of the availability of feed, and aquaculture will follow the same path.
So then how significant is aquaculture in the U.S.?
So in the U.S., it's roughly probably a $12 billion industry. But as you look globally, FAO, United Nations, has it pegged at about $99 billion. And we import somewhere north of 90% of our seafood that we consume here domestically. So the opportunity is there. It's just getting some of the technological advancements made, and also the American consumer. I mean, we, much like Bill had mentioned earlier, the Asian diets are very accustomed to having seafood and fish as the center portion of their protein, where in the United States, we are much more beef, pork, and chicken. So it's a change in diets and also just the adoption of new technology.
So as far as the Soy Aquaculture Alliance is concerned, are you focused more domestically than what's going on globally?
So we're kind of straddling the fence.
Okay.
I mean, we definitely want to do all we can to develop our domestic aquaculture industry, but we also know there's a huge opportunity globally because at the end of the day, we bring it back to soybean meal demand. And so we know that's where the current demand is, but let's continue to do research that we can enhance and develop this domestic market because, we've got a great opportunity because we are importing so much of our seafood.
Yeah, gee, I was shocked, I guess, when I was reading this over some of the material that the 85% is what we're importing into this country. You talked about facilities. Are universities helping out when it comes to that part of what's needed to grow the industry?
Bill? Oh, very, very much so. As he mentioned, Andy mentioned earlier, Auburn University, Idaho University, actually Kansas State, Texas A&M, we were in a facility in Minnesota and South Dakota last summer. Very exciting research and smaller facilities developed to on the verge of making them commercial sized facilities. So it's a very exciting world. And just like he was talking about the Food and Agriculture Organization of United Nations, they're saying by 2025, which is only what, 7-8 years from now, we're going to grow 39% worldwide. It's a huge opportunity and volume and need there. So hopefully we will still, as the Asian population grows, there will be a little some extra seafood produced so we in Americas can have our share.
Sounds like a challenge to meet that growing demand.
Yes, absolutely, because you know, like any type of new business, there's regulatory issues that must be overcome and those type of things. So there are a lot of challenges. And, you know, early on, aquaculture kind of got a bad name within some of the environmentalist communities and some of the others, because we just didn't have the messaging and PR right when they started. But, you know, aquaculture, farm-raised fish is a great option, still contains all the health benefits of wild-caught, and many times is more sustainable.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk about the environmental aspects of aquaculture, and then we're going to maybe spend a little time talking about some of the health benefits, too. All of that and more coming up on Town Hall, Ohio.
If anybody asks where I'm at, gone fishing, waste some time, gone fishing, leave my troubles behind, gone fishing.
Well, if you're going fishing with us, you're going to have to bait your own hook. We don't do that, but we're talking aquaculture here on Town Hall, Ohio. I'm Dave Russell, sitting in for Joe this week, and my guest is Bill Bayless, chairman of the Soy Aquaculture Alliance from West Mansfield, Ohio, and Andy Tower, interim executive director of the Soy Aquaculture Alliance. Gentlemen, again, thank you so much for being able to come over and spend a few minutes with us today to talk about aquaculture. Maybe what we need to do, Andy, is how do we define aquaculture? Is it just fish?
That's a great question, because aquaculture can be fish, it can be shellfish, it can be marine fish. So I mean, it's a very large industry across the globe.
Now, I understand that shellfish is what, the largest growing segment?
Yes, shrimp in particular, especially here in the United States, that is the largest imported seafood product that we do have. And so it continues to grow, and there's a lot of opportunities in that space.
The last segment, we talked about some of the economics of aquaculture. I guess we need to include in that maybe jobs. Are we talking significant jobs when it comes to this segment of an industry, Bill?
Well, I believe we are. And it is cyclical agriculture, dealing with Mother Nature. I just read an article where our Gulf Coast, United States Gulf Coast, is having their largest shrimp harvest. So, you know, it goes up and down, but there's a lot of jobs down there. And I have visited some of those shrimp ports in Louisiana and Florida. And now it all goes back to food. And I like food, all kinds of food. But, boy, you can really get into this seafood and shrimp and lobster and mussels and salmon, I guess, is the ones that top right off, although it's a huge cobia farm down off the coast of Panama. I was at a striped bass farm off the coast of Mexico, just an hour south of our San Diego borderline. And excellent food, different tastes, I think's what's getting the American public's attention right now.
So does the Soy Aquaculture Alliance focus at all on the job aspect of the industry?
Oh, yeah. That's where our economy can use it. Why support jobs around the world, for starters? And we have some of the top research right here in the United States that's being utilized around the world. Now we'd like to utilize that research here in the United States. And when Andy talked about the U.S. I think he used abbreviation, but it's U.S. Soy Export Council, is focuses on exporting. We work hand in hand with them, try to do their research that they can utilize around the whole globe.
Let's talk a little bit about the environment. Are there environmental benefits from aquaculture?
Yes, absolutely. And I think from the soybean perspective, one of the key ones is the sustainability of the protein from soybean meal as it compares to fish meal. We continue to see fish meal volumes decrease, which again classic supply and demand function. So we've seen fish meal as high as $2,500 a ton versus soybean meal coming in, around $300. So there is a huge sustainability benefit to the soybean side of the fish diets, as well as we continue to develop these new technologies, just like the in-pond raceway systems, where we're utilizing that water over multiple cycles of fish versus, traditionally to harvest that fish, you would have to drain the pond and then refill it with new water. And so now with some of these technologies, we're able to continue to use that water, continuously harvest the nutrients coming off the backside of the fish and use those for aquaponics or some other type of value-added opportunities. So, yes, there's absolutely some environmental benefit that comes from aquaculture.
Bill?
Or then you go on even beyond the ponds into the indoor tanks, huge facilities, thousands, millions of fish in pristine atmosphere where there's no birds bringing in diseases, so disease-free. It's just a maybe a more controlled way of growing the fish and controlling everything.
Are there environmental regulations that's holding the industry back at all?
So I would say yes. One of the challenges with aquaculture, it doesn't fit neatly into any of our existing regulatory frameworks, whether it be at EPA, at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, at NOAA, at Fish and Wildlife. And so, yes, as we look at some of our western United States, I've been told that some of those aquaculture facilities may need as many as 11 different individual permits to be able to have an aquaculture facility. And so, yeah, it's kind of based on size of the facility and your geography, where you're at, kind of how much and exactly what piece of the regulatory structure comes over the top.
Well, we're going to talk more about the environment as well as health benefits when Town Hall Ohio continues.
And it don't matter if we sit forever and the fish don't bite. We'll jump in a river and cool ourselves from the heat of the night.
Welcome back to Town Hall, Ohio. I'm Dave Russell, sitting in for Joe, and joining me here today, Bill Bayless, chairman of the Soy Aquaculture Alliance from West Mansfield, and Andy Tower, interim executive director of the Soy Aquaculture Alliance. We ended the last segment talking about the environment. So who oversees aquaculture production here in the U.S.?
So it could fall under U.S. Fish and Wildlife, U.S. EPA, NOAA, and then FDA and USDA. So there's a whole gamut of regulatory agencies can oversee the production side and then moves more into FDA, USDA in the food side.
So are regulations one of the one of the main things that may be holding the industry back?
But it is a big challenge in the United States and the perception of livestock in general. But now up in Northeast Ohio, the shellfish industry have really got their communities involved, and they see the economic advantage of it. So it's really going along pretty well up there. However, there's other areas, not only all the different agencies that Andy just spoke of, but you get right down to your local township trustees or your county commissioners or even maybe the local Indian tribe. If any one of those people or organizations, groups, doesn't feel like they have a good feel for it, it can hold up the whole work. So it's a challenging when someone's wanting to invest a large sum of money into an organization like that.
Bill, let me ask, since taking over as chair of the Soy Aquaculture Alliance, what's the one thing that has surprised you most about the aquaculture industry?
it's very vibrant. I didn't realize the depth and maybe all the different species that we're dealing with. So the nutritional challenges there is probably the biggest thing.
Give us an example of a species that we can talk about.
So I think the one that, of course, most folks are familiar with are salmon. And salmon are actually more of a carnivorous fish. So to get them to eat more of a veg diet, it takes some work. And so we've had some challenges, but through research, we've been able to identify some specific genetic strains of salmon that are more adaptable to more of a vegetarian diet. And also one of the, you know, back to the regulatory side, we just had a huge win for soy aquaculture in this this last winter. We were able to start now using an amino acid called taurine in aquaculture diets, which allows us to increase the inclusion rates of soybean meal just because we now have that available to us.
So again, is that something that wouldn't have happened without the investment of soybean farmers?
I think that one would have been a long time coming. That was an initiative that really was championed by the Soy Aquaculture Alliance. And so we were, through a lot of the research that was done and some collaboration with other varying stakeholders, we were able to get that amino acid licensed or labeled for use in aquaculture diets.
And one of that is the amino acid. Average person doesn't know what that is, but we led the charge on that because taurine is used in Coke. Everybody drinks Coke. You know, it's not something exotic, but it just never been documented, approved in fish feed. But it was a major link that allowed the fish to utilize the vegetative-type diet.
So because of the involvement of soybean farmers, does that group kind of bring a different perspective to the industry or maybe ask questions that others don't think about?
I think absolutely, because I think as soybean farmers have had to deal with all kinds of challenges over the years, whether it be both just strictly on the grain side or the marketing side, I think they bring a whole different lens to the conversation in the aquaculture arenas. And so we've heard a lot of good feedback from our aquaculture partners that, you know, they really appreciate the investment and the thought process that the soybean farmers are bringing to the table.
Bill, in about the 20 seconds that we have left in this segment, is this a good investment for soybean farmers?
Oh, absolutely. And I think sustainability is a big thing. We have a soybean supply, and we're growing it every year, so it's sustainable. U.S. farmers in particular have their own sustainability protocol that come about in 1980s, 4 or 5, with our water quality and sod, I forget the name of the bill, but that's come back to be a major benefit to us to certify that we're sustainable around the world.
And we'll have more about aquaculture after this.
Got a bamboo pole and a leaky boat. It ain't much, but if you bail, it'll float. I'm gonna take you fishing, honey.
We are talking aquaculture on Town Hall, Ohio, with Bill Bayless, chairman of the Soy Aquaculture Alliance, and Andy Tower, interim executive director. Let's talk about health benefits. Are there significant health benefits eating seafood?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, by eating seafood, I mean, it's been documented that it can help with heart health, lower cholesterol levels, omega-3s. And so there's a great opportunity as I think as Americans and globally folks are becoming a little bit more health conscious to move fish a little deeper into your daily diets.
In fact, what USDA and the Heart Association is even recommending that we up our consumption of seafood.
Exactly. Now, as he was saying, I think the U.S. public is getting more conscientious. You look at any menu or most menus. Now, I was just at dinner the other night with my wife, And I've got some experience under my belt, so my wife's concerned about my diet. And you look at the calories on these menus, salmon is the low-calorie, delicious opportunity there to use, as well as a lot of the just seafood in general is a great diet and very tasty.
And again, Bill, going back to what you were talking about earlier with the Asians and the amount of seafood that they consume, maybe we can learn little something.
Yes.
So is there a difference between domestically produced seafood and seafood that's imported?
From a food safety perspective, no. I mean, because any of our imported food still has to meet our USDA, FDA standards, food safety and quality. You know, the thing I think we could say about domestic is we're benefiting U.S. farmers and producers by choosing domestic seafood over imported seafood.
As well as the local processing, transportation, the whole general economy, it's here U.S. Businesses instead of being shipped in from other countries.
So what one or two things need to happen here in the U.S. to grow the industry to what's going to be needed in the future?
So I think the big thing is education, both within the aquaculture and stakeholder groups as well as consumers. Because again, there is such a lack of education about, you know, the benefits that come from aquaculture as compared to wild catch. And then we just need some collaboration on research and what are our priorities for moving this industry forward.
We talked a little bit about the raising fish indoors, but outdoors, can we raise seafood in federal waters?
Yes. And that's, again, that was another huge win, I think, was a lot of work that was done by the Soy Aquaculture Alliance through our Coalition for Seafood U.S. Seafood Production. Is in 2016, the federal government released a rule that now allows for aquaculture production in the Gulf of Mexico. And so, yes, we have got a great opportunity. We have the largest federal waters anywhere on the planet, but they're very underutilized as we look at aquaculture. So great opportunity there.
Bill, as we get ready to wrap things up here on the show, anything in particular that you want folks to keep in mind when it comes to aquaculture in the U.S.?
Well, I was just thinking about what he was just saying. The facilities I've visited just over the border, like in Mexico or down in Panama, they are developed there because it's close proximity to our major markets. So if we can get by some of these regulatory rules or perceptions, I think it would open the door for major growth.
Bill Bayless, Chairman of the Soy Aquaculture Alliance from West Mansfield, Ohio, and Andy Tower, Interim Executive Director of the Soy Aquaculture Alliance. Gentlemen, we are out of time. Thank you so much for making the trip over to spend some time visiting with us about aquaculture here in the U.S. It's a growing industry that we're going to be hearing more and more about. And thanks to the U.S. soybean farmers for the investment that they are making in the aquaculture industry. For Joe, I'm Dave Russell.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall Ohio.